Welcome to the Command Line Podcast for November 28th, 2014. I'm your host, Thomas Command Line Gideon, a self-proclaimed hacker, eccentric, and hacktivist. This is my show about the practice and profession of programming, drawing on well over a decade of professional experience and a lifetime spent hacking, the intersection of technology with society and public policy, and anything else clever, elegant, or funny that catches my mind as a diehard technology geek. I'm glad to be back on the mic so quick. I guess it helps that I took the week off here, the short holiday week off, so I've had some time to relax, to energize, to think. I do have, as I did in the last episode, a couple of new essays that I want to share with you. My apologies if you've already read them. Hopefully, once again, you'll find them either enjoyable in the reading in a different format, or if you have a suggestion for how to approach the harmonizing of content between the site and the podcast, you can send that to feedback@thecommandline.net. I really would like to hear it. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that if I'm not hearing from you by now, or a couple of weeks of, within a couple of weeks of me putting this up, you're actually fine. And my instinct that there isn't a huge strong overlap between listeners and readers is probably right. One thing did occur to me, and I'm not going to try it for this episode because I've already put both of the essays out, but I have another essay that I'm thinking about writing next that I'm going to pair with one that I've already published, the one about sense of scaling. And I think what I'm going to experiment with there, and I'd be curious to see if this prods any feedback, is to hold that back a little bit and do the podcast actually between the publication of the two posts. So maybe that is a compromise that splits the difference a little bit more, but has overall the same level of effort and the same integration between, again, the site and the podcast, and hence those efficiencies that I'm looking for. The two essays I have for you are still a bit more personal rather than technical, but they are, I think, focused much more on the professional as they were catalyzed by experiences I had going through my recent job search. So if you've gone through a recent job search, if you're thinking about in the new year some change in your career direction, if you find yourself in the midst of a job search, hopefully there's something here that's helpful to you. And I promise the next couple of essays will take a turn more towards the practice of programming rather than the profession or the philosophy. Listening through the last episode, I felt that it was a little dry without a little bit more in the way of kind of bumps and sweeps. So I'm still experimenting to find what allows me the least effort, the most efficiency to sit down and just record. I think I'll probably be doing a little bit of engineering on the audio on the back end to just make things easier to drop in so they're a lot more seamless. That's probably more inside baseball than you were concerned about. But I do actually like things being broken up a little bit rather than just continually straight talking through. And I'll just try to find a way to continue to do that consistent with the way I used to do that. That's just a little bit easier. Anyway, the first of the two essays that I wanted to share from the website is Searching for Myself. I sat across the table today from an account manager at a staffing firm. I didn't expect to be there. I had taken a phone screen the week prior, my first in-depth technical assessment that I thought I had completely fumbled. Looking back at my notes from right after the call, I wrote in big block letters, fail. Right after that, I wrote three quick bullet points, things I needed to do in order to avoid failing like that again. In a nutshell, I had not prepared for the call. Things I knew when I was more actively programming refused to pop instantly into my head. Instead, I struggled, even though I knew the answers to his questions. The questions were mostly what I call technical trivia, information that is easily searched for online and rarely demonstrates a grasp of useful programming knowledge or skill. I have since made good on those action items in my notes. I promised myself I would not take an opportunity for granted again, preparing as best I could for each one from here forward. I've been on the job search a handful of times over the years. I'm not sure I previously had such a moment of self-awareness. In the past, even under difficult circumstances, I found it too easy to take my knowledge and skills for granted. If I failed, I wrote it off and blithely looked towards the next opportunity. If I had to be charitable in explaining myself, I suppose I would say that more often than not, I have had the good fortune to be looking when time was a luxury, when I was still employed. Dismissing a failure without learning from it didn't seem to carry any meaningful risk. For some reason, this failure was different. Maybe it was because of an earlier failure in the same search. I had come close, but ultimately failed at a first opportunity when I started my search in earnest back in September. That first chance was like all the others, I guess. I didn't especially prepare. I relied on my wits, my ability to communicate, and luck more than anything else. When I didn't get that job, I was crushed. I really liked the company and the people. Still do. The whole experience was great, even doing a 30-hour quick turnaround trip from coast to coast. The role was a new one to me that seemed like an amazing way to both return to more hands-on technical work, coding, as well as to continue to engage my writing and speaking skills. They even found me through my podcast rather than me finding them. Maybe the disappointment, in myself as much as anything, was a wake-up call. I'd used several weeks pretty much exclusively on one job prospect. At that time, I didn't have an end date for my current job. I have been blessed to have my hard work during a difficult transition be rewarded by my current employer with support and patience. I now have an end date, one that is still incredibly generous, not in the least because they know I'm actively looking. On some level, I knew even before I discussed an explicit end date that it would come, that it would be soon. Realizing I had worked through several weeks with no other prospects to show for it definitely lit a fire under me. I may have overcompensated. I usually am skittish about working with recruiters or staffing firms. In my experience, they don't save time and often focus on opportunities very different from the ones I find most rewarding. Despite my prior experience, I didn't feel like I could afford to leave anything unexplored. After I applied to all the obvious good fits, I kept on applying to the consulting and contracting jobs I know I could do, but that I would not enjoy anywhere near as much. That's how I ended up today at a staffing firm talking to an account manager. Up to this point, I had convinced myself I could and would pursue this all the way through. Part of me added, if I had to that last sentence, while the rest of me, prior to today, worked hard to ignore that contingency. This account manager called me on it. He grilled me about the usual stuff. Had I used this technology and where? What about that tool? How had I approached this challenge, solved another problem? At some point, he stopped. He looked at me and asked me frankly if I felt I would be happy at this job he was pitching. He went so far as to explain that his reason for asking is that he suspected I wouldn't be. At the risk of his commission, he didn't think that made sense in the long run. For a moment, I prevaricated. I doubt he even noticed. The moment was so fleeting. I admitted he was right. I admitted as much to myself as to him. Giving up on an opportunity, even when I knew wasn't right, didn't feel great. But the notion of stringing it along only to say no when a better offer came along didn't feel any better. At that moment, I realized that this entire job search really was different. In the past, I've always at least tried to focus on what I really want to be doing. I haven't always succeeded. I don't think I was making as intentional choices as I could have, rolling with what came my way and rationalizing it after the fact. My engagement, and especially my learning from those experiences, were thin at best. For this search, the stakes haven't really changed. I still need a job, ideally before the end of this year. What has changed is my openness to being honest with myself. I'm far more willing to learn from every single experience along the way this time around. Maybe opening up will improve my prospects, maybe it won't. I'm pretty sure I will find the rest of my search far more rewarding by admitting that I'm both searching for a job, for a career next step, and at the same time, searching for myself. Just a quick reader's comment. In between the writing of these two essays, I actually did receive a couple of offers, and I accepted one, and I am going to start a new job on December 1st. That's just on the other side of the weekend as I record this, the Friday after Thanksgiving as observed here in the U.S. This next essay I wrote after I had accepted that offer, and I was just really kind of reflecting on the experiences that I'd had over the past 3.5+ years. Some of the things that I've touched on in earlier essays on the website and talked a little bit at from a different perspective in the last episode with the Touching Earth and Little Acorns essays. The second essay I'm going to share with you is titled, In Some Small Measure, Wisdom. Yesterday I took what ended up being an epic walk. I've already written about how I have been walking more recently. Reader's note, there'll be a link in the show notes to the essay where I talk about my new practice of walking. Walking more has been easier over the last 2 months. I had been taking days off, or at least working from home while focused on my job search. The other week, I had a sudden run of days in DC, but hadn't yet come up with an attractive walking route to help me keep up my new habit. And looking around on an online map of what was nearby, I found Constitution Gardens. The gardens truly are one of the hidden treasures of Washington, D.C., and I wish I'd found them sooner. There's a huge water feature, within which is a small island that has a ring of stones engraved with the signatures of all those who signed the Declaration of Independence. The gardens are a decent half-hour walk from where I work. Worked. Today is my last day, and my new gig is located much closer to home, in the suburbs. During that first walk to the gardens, I paused near the World War II Memorial and happened to notice the Jefferson Memorial was close by. On that day, I promised myself I would come back to see that site before my last working day in D.C. I did just that yesterday, taking advantage of some cold but stunning weather. The online maps make the memorial seem far closer to the gardens than it is, at least by foot. I walked around the World War II Memorial, I crossed several beating arteries of downtown traffic, and started around the Tidal Basin. The view of the memorial as you walk under the cherry trees is breathtaking, especially on a clear, sunny day like yesterday. The view lingers, as the walk around the basin is a good 20 minutes. When I finished my visit, I continued my way around the other side of the basin, which is even a little longer than the side I walked on the way down. The time and distance, an hour and a half and more than 4 miles respectively, were only part of what made the walk epic, at least to me. Thomas Jefferson holds a special place in my regard. He attended my alma mater, where we refer to him as either Young Tom or Our Tom. We use the latter especially around UVA students. Jefferson founded UVA, but he was a student at William & Mary. The claim to him is part of the two schools' long-standing rivalry. More importantly, when I was just getting involved in online activism, exploring topics around creativity and intellectual property in a post-digital, post-network world, a quote of his spoke to me deeply. In a letter to Isaac McPherson, he wrote this particular turn of phrase in talking about intellectual property, its nature, and how we should think of its regulation, for instance, by copyright. Its peculiar character, too, is that no one possesses the less because every other possesses the whole of it. He who receives an idea from me receives instruction himself without lessening mine, as he who lights his taper at mine receives light without darkening me. That ideas should be freely spread from one to the other over the globe for the moral and mutual instruction of man and improvement of his condition seems to have been peculiarly and benevolently designed by nature when she made them, like fire, expansible over all space without lessening their density in any point, and like the air in which we breathe, move, and have our physical being, incapable of confinement or exclusive appropriation. Inventions, then, cannot, in nature, be a subject of property. Visiting his memorial was a touchstone. At first I thought also it might be a farewell, a sort of personal resignation. I am leaving the world of working directly for the public interest to return to the private industry. The memorial is filled with inspiring quotes, four of them in massive panels interspersed with openings out onto views of the Tidal Basin, the Potomac, and parts of downtown D.C. A more subtle quote is worked into the stone just beneath the dome. I have sworn, upon the altar of God eternal, hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Standing in a contemplative space dedicated to someone whose writing called to me across the generations, thinking about this transition in my life, that last part really struck me. Even though for reasons related to my own pursuit of happiness, I was leaving behind the service of the public interest, in my own way I can certainly hold to fighting every form of tyranny over the mind of man. I can do so wherever I find myself, not least on this site and in my podcast, as I am renewing and recommitting to my writing and thinking here. That thought touched off what I hope is at least some small measure of wisdom I can take away from this job, more so than I have managed to realize when leaving jobs past. Earlier in my career, I often gave into the urge to demonize the people or experiences from a job I was leaving. I've read enough to understand I'm not alone in feeling the urge to do so. Humans are storytelling creatures. We continually weave a story of our own life. Our own individual narratives first and foremost support who we think we are. When the world around us is at odds with who we believe ourselves to be, we feel pain in the form of cognitive dissonance. The easiest way to alleviate that pain is to change our narrative, despite the facts, to restore the version of ourselves we believe is true. I increasingly believe the secret of true wisdom is to resist rewriting our personal narratives. If we admit our faults, the tale becomes the richer for it. We invite in opportunities to learn, to actually grow, and honestly become more of whom we would like ourselves to be, in fact and in deed. In holding more to the complicated, messy, objective facts of our lives, we can better embrace humility, honesty, and courage, rather than simply rewriting the narrative. If we revise our story, we miss that chance to harness our faults and mistakes to urge us on to do and be better in the future. That's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank you for listening, especially those who have stuck it out despite the absences. Hopefully there will be more episodes soon. If you enjoyed them, please do tell a friend. If you have a suggestion, correction, or just feedback, you can send those as an email or record an audio message on your smart device and send those along to feedback@thecommandline.net. The next episode might be an interview with Cory Doctorow. I don't know if I'm going to get in the pair of more technical essays between now and then, but I'm scheduled to record with him in about a week and a half about his new nonfiction book, Information Doesn't Want to Be Free. Very much looking forward to that. I'm about halfway through the book and enjoying it immensely. Hopefully you'll enjoy that conversation. Until next time, don't forget to hack your world. I would like to thank the Internet Archive for media hosting and bandwidth. The views expressed on this program are my own, and where applicable, those of my guests, and in no way reflect those of my employer or anyone else. This show is produced from 100% recycled bits. Except where noted, permission to recycle those further is granted under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. That means you're free to change this show as much as you like, as long as you don't alter credits and you share your changes under the same license.